This week in the Famicom Dojo podcast, the release of Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze has us wondering, what happened to Retro? What happened to Rare? What happens to a lot of the great game companies we used to know? We answer in email about Saturn Bomberman and Future Retro, and Vink admits to owning a Grand Theft Auto game. Scary, right? Hey, Vink.
Hey, Mr. Sean.
How's it going?
Oh, pretty good. Long week. Pretty tired.
Oh, no. Well, I think you should relax by playing our video game.
Wait, our video game? Are you and I sharing a video game these days?
Well, it's not our video game, but it was a quick three-stage game made about us, Famicom Dojo specifically.
Wow, that sounds like a terrible, boring game.
Oh, no. Well, it could be. I don't think so. I was thrilled, to be honest.
Okay.
Fan Lewis Lloyd Judson, who has previously done a little bit of artwork for us.
He made my Twitter avatar.
Yes, I'm using that as well on Facebook, I believe. He decided he wanted to play around a little bit with HTML5 Canvas, which the geeks all over might have swooned just now. But it's pretty cool, and he wrote a little like three panel game with me as the playable character, going around collecting Famicom carts and ending with VinkCon.
Spoilers. Yes. Well, now you've just revealed the last part of the game. Well, no, I mean, what about let's see, what am I calling this guy? Non-copyright infringement Muppet.
Yes. Probably can't even call him a Muppet, I bet.
Oh, sorry. Non-copyright infringement puppet. What is a Muppet? It's a mixture of a mop and a puppet.
Yes. Yeah. There are just a ton of crazy, crazy in-jokes crammed into this thing. And the artwork is just gorgeous.
Oh yeah, I would totally play a full game of this. And interestingly enough, it works on the Wii U gamepad, which is crazy, really crazy. And it works on my iPhone as well. And yeah, it actually looks really good on the iPhone. It looks like, man, we should make an iPhone game.
Right? Yeah. It checks for context, so it knows if it's playing on a mobile device, and then it'll bring up an on-screen directional pad, which is the only control you have in the game, and then or otherwise, like if it's on a PC or whatever, you just use your keys. But I guess on the Wii U, you just load up the browser, and you can use the directional pad on the gamepad, which is super awesome because it works just like the directional pad on the computer, apparently, for the browser.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's just JavaScript and HTML5 and a couple of images, a couple of image files, and yeah. That's it. It's really simple, and I would love to see or make a longer game.
I wish I could make chiptune versions of our theme song.
Maybe someone out there would be willing to do that.
If you can make chiptune versions of our theme song, let us know, I guess.
It got me thinking, you know, like last week, I think it was entirely an accident, or maybe not. I noticed that both of our Future Retro games, when I was writing up the show notes, were indie titles.
Yeah.
Which, you know, is one data point is hardly a trend, but it kind of got me wondering, it's like, what game publishers do I really like and look forward to their releases these days?
That is a good question. Is Double Fine indie?
I guess so, because they team up with different kinds of publishers. They're, you know, they're a developer, right? And they had The Cave published under Sega, for instance.
Okay, but I mean, they're kind of like half indie. Like they're a big indie. They're like what is it? Like they might be giants, you know what I mean? They're sure. like indie, but enough people have heard about them that they tiptoe around the mainstream.
I think they're about as indie as Way Forward. Probably a little bit more so, because Way Forward is not a lot of licensed stuff, and they either self-publish or partner with publishers when they do their own development.
Well, I mean, Double Fine's done licensed stuff too. Didn't they do a Mickey Mouse game or something? Or Disney title? Or I might be wrong. I might be wrong on that. Some kind of licensed like Kinect title.
But you can usually trace these companies back to some, you know, big AAA publisher or developer, Tim Schafer worked for LucasArts for however long.
Yep, and so did a lot of the people from Telltale.
Yeah. So it's no coincidence that they're making the kinds of games that we liked in the 90s, and so we can point to LucasArts and be like, hey, I liked those, and now, you know, some of the people who used to work there live on and work on, despite that LucasArts is no more.
Yeah. I mean, it's like the company. It when the Disney acquisition happened, did they just shutter the company completely, or did they get merged with Disney Interactive Studios?
Yeah, it took a little while, but they basically fired all of the talents, and they're just keeping the IP more or less, whatever there is.
Was there still talent there? I mean, really?
Yeah, I was reading up on it.
It sounds like
it
sounds like everyone really talented jumped ship. Well. Okay, let me take that back.
There was a combination of things.
I bet there were a lot of talented, like, Star Wars-making game people still there.
Hey, now, all right. So I actually read an article, which I should really find and put in the show notes, about how around 2004 or so, this guy who was on the film side of things for LucasArts came in to sort of turn the company around and become, like, a top-tier publisher again. But yeah. He didn't understand things like, you know, why can games get pushed back and have delays? In the film industry, you make your date or you don't. And yeah. I guess their first release was like Battlefront 2 or something.
Yeah.
Even though they had enormous scope creep, it was supposed to be originally like a multiplayer game, and they had to add a single player campaign to it. Despite that, they had to still meet their deadline, and they did, which, as this article says, was a terrible lesson for this executive and the company in general to learn, because it just got worse and worse from there. And you have people ending up making decisions about game design who were like in QA and stuff, who had no business doing that. And a lot of people ended up leaving. They got restructured so that they went from like 700 employees, like around 160 or so. Like there were a lot of executive edicts that turned the company into the shell of what it was, and it was hardly just some kind of unfortunate slow slide into obscurity. It was a series of very specific things. I should really look that up.
I mean, they hadn't made a game that I'd bought or been interested in 10 years, so I mean, right. that's just how it is there. I mean, once they stopped making adventure games. I've never really been into the Star Wars games, so, you know. And that's really the only output I saw from them, so.
But, I mean, like, yeah. who else is there right now whose releases I look forward to? I mean, everyone who listens to this show knows I love BioWare. I will buy Dragon Age Inquisition the moment it comes out, and the next Mass Effect, probably.
Yeah, well, yeah, there's one you got. That's nice. No, I'm sorry. I don't know. I'm trying. I mean, maybe if I ever started a BioWare series from the beginning, maybe I can. I don't know. My experience with Mass Effect 3, as just playing Mass Effect 3 coming into it, was just confusing, and it sure did look pretty though.
Well, at least you got it cheap.
Oh yeah, I got it real cheap. And for anybody who wants it right now, I think it's like sub $12 now. So,
oh dear, yeah. I think I was in Best Buy not too long ago, and it was on a rack. I think along with Injustice. No, I think it was just Mass Effect 3. It was on a clearance rack.
Yeah.
So, what are you gonna do?
I'm going to blame EA for releasing it in general. I don't know. I'm going to appreciate that you still love BioWare and that's your company. For me, sure. Platinum Games.
Platinum Games. I am looking forward to Bayonetta 2.
I have not played a bad game by Platinum Games yet. I haven't played all their games. I have not yet played which one? Was it Anarchy Reigns, I think?
Yeah.
Maybe. I don't know. And I guess I haven't played their take on Metal Gear either. But I played, and I guess I'm kind of including the Clover stuff that they did before they were Platinum Games, like Beautiful Joe, God Hand,
mm-hmm.
Okami, you know, stuff like that, that I just loved. It wasn't the deepest of games, but I enjoyed, what was that, Mad World?
Mm-hmm.
The first Bayonetta. I know I played the PlayStation 3 version, so I hear that the Xbox 360 version looked a lot better because that's the original platform it was developed for, but sure. I enjoyed it. What else has Platinum put out?
They did Wonderful 101, right?
They did Wonderful 101, yes, which is indeed Wonderful 101. they did Vanquish, which I usually don't like that type of game, but I thought they captured a lot of the tension very well. Haven't beat it, but overall, pretty much whatever they put out, I may not buy it, but I usually look forward to their titles. And if it's in a genre that I enjoy, I'll probably pick it up.
Okay, so I definitely want to play Bayonetta at this point, even though I didn't really play a lot of the original except for a demo at PAX East 2010, I think, or something. Maybe not a demo, but like a kiosk they had available. And I don't know, I liked what I saw of the trailer. Some press release calls her a witch, and I was like, what? I was like, well, I guess there's all these weird magical stuff going on too.
Yeah, it's a good game. And the Wii U one looks amazing. It would have had games like that at launch, people wouldn't have been so down on the graphics. Because it's obviously not PlayStation 4 quality, but like when you have really good art direction, you can make up for a lot of that stuff. And if you can lock it down at a good good frame rate as well. And there's my other company. I don't know if I can, it's kind of a blanket statement, but like Nintendo is a great, game maker.
Yeah. I was just thinking that
but I don't like everything they put out.
Well, what like, do they do themselves anymore? They're outsourcing a lot of stuff to second parties. Like Retro is doing the Donkey Kong Country series now.
Yeah. I mean, isn't Retro a first party now? Aren't they wholly owned by Nintendo?
I guess. I mean, but I guess. Like, second party is kind of a fuzzy definition anyway.
Well, a second party is kind of like a developer who's still independent, but who works like exclusively with another company. The company doesn't actually own them. But I believe, and I could be wrong on this, but I believe Retro is actually completely owned by Nintendo now.
At this point, I think you're right. So, yeah.
Silicon Knights never were.
Right.
They were a second party studio.
Like Rare, like I know Nintendo owned a big stake in Rare. And Rare,
I think Rare actually was a first party.
Was it fully owned?
But I'm not sure if they were fully owned, but I mean, darn near close, but they let Microsoft buy them out, and Nintendo's.
Well,
probably...
they didn't let Microsoft buy them out. Nintendo opted to sell.
Yeah,
and they had to be bought by someone.
Considering the output that Rare's done since then, smart move.
Well, that's another example of talent leaving a studio and forming their own. Like, what's the name of the guys who made Time Splitters?
It was
something Fractal.
Free Radical.
Yeah. So like the people who made Perfect Dark, a game that I liked, went and did Time Splitters, and then when Perfect Dark Zero came out on Xbox 360, it was obvious there was no one left.
And I mean, well, you know, that's another topic altogether, but Free Radical is a great example of the AAA killing game studios.
Oh, yeah.
They released Haze, and it didn't do what they needed it to do, and that was it. Studio done. You know, it can take just one high-profile failure, and a company is done. That's why we're losing all the little companies in between. Like, a lot of my favorite companies don't exist anymore, because unless they're huge companies, they couldn't survive.
Oh, you know, like I guess this is proof that Platinum Games is first party, because Wonderful 101 didn't sell wonderfully, but that was entirely Nintendo's lack of marketing. And
well, Wonderful Platinum's not first party though. In fact, they're not even second party. They're fully third party, because they're doing games for all the platforms right now. So.
Wait, are they? I'm confused. we got those confused. Retro is the one that got fully on. Okay.
Yes.
Right. But Nintendo got exclusive rights to Bayonetta 2, which I guess could change in the future.
No, it won't. It can't. They're fully funding it. I mean, the only way that Bayonetta 2, and this is something that, every time there's a Bayonetta threat on everything, everyone's like, port, please, port. Want it on the Xbox One. Want it on the PlayStation 4. It won't happen unless Nintendo says, okay,
right.
You may have this. You know, it's. I mean, there could be another Bayonetta game on another platform. Sure,
it just won't be this one.
Bayonetta trademark is owned by Sega, which is unfortunate, because if Platinum owned the actual thing, they wouldn't have to go through. You know, we wouldn't have to have three different people. You know, three different companies working on this game, but. But Nintendo is fully funding the game.
Okay. Like,
and they have, and it is not a timed exclusive. It is an exclusive, you know? And even Nintendo would have to sign off on if they made like a hardcore edition for other platforms. Like, Nintendo's a stakeholder in it.
Right.
So it is possible. Crazy things have happened, like Microsoft allowing the Rare developed Game Boy Advance titles to go through, or Microsoft putting out Viva Pinata on the 3DS. It's possible. I suppose if Nintendo's very, very strapped for cash.
Which they aren't yet, despite all the doom and gloom.
It's not Platinum's say, and it's not Sega's say.
Right.
Well, I mean, it is. All three of them have to be in agreement, obviously.
Right.
But you know, Nintendo would have to go, okay, we shall allow this game to be on other platforms. And the creators of the game have said just that. Platinum has been on record a number of times saying, do you want this? If you want this game on another platform, you've got to ask Nintendo, you know? Like, Zelda could be on another platform too if Nintendo wishes it to be.
Oh, I don't even want to go down that road of the mobile gaming.
But that's the thing. I mean, do I think it's great that Nintendo has picked up this Bayonetta exclusive? The console fanboy in me thinks so, I guess, because it could be one that actually sells the system to a certain type of gamer who would have no interest otherwise. But in general, it saddens me that very few people are probably ever going to experience this game, which looks right now to be very, very good.
So I just gotta wonder, you know, is there anything Nintendo itself is doing that it really excites me anymore? Like, I guess I'm enjoying 3D World. I haven't played a whole lot of it since we last spoke about it, but I don't know. It just feels like I need them to do something new.
I don't know. For me, the exact opposite. I feel like it was the breath of fresh air that Mario needed, with really, really unique and clever things going on all through it.
I definitely need to play more of it, because I'm still on, I'm like the start of the second world right now. I'm not very far.
Yeah, it picks up as it goes along, but I don't know. I love that game, and that's done by their stu which studio is that? It's like their Tokyo EAD studio, I think, or EDA, whatever. And that studio is responsible for, they did the Galaxy series as well, and unfortunately they don't put out games very often because they put a lot of effort into their titles. I guess I'll buy pretty much anything they do. Nintendo in general, if they're making a title that's aimed more at hardcore is the wrong word here, the gamer audience rather than the casual audience, I'll
Sure.
probably, like, I'm going to buy Mario Kart, definitely, because I got like thousands of hours in play with the original one. Just, having family and friends over to play that.
I don't think I've played a bad Zelda game. The 3DO, or sorry, the CDI game was excluded.
The third one wasn't so bad.
Yeah, that was the one that starred Zelda.
And it was a top down. I mean, it wasn't
Yeah.
compared to judging it as a game.
Yeah.
It was judging it at, but like if it was just a standard top down mascot, action RPG game, middling. It
Right.
wasn't an abomination like the first two.
Right. It's not meme inducing.
But like, well, it probably is. I mean, there's a lot of, I don't know. There's such a market. There's such a necessity on the internet for review shows to like knock down every game as much as possible. But I mean, there's a little too much hyperbole going on lately, I think. And I mean, some games which are, yeah, they're not classics. They're not the best games of all time, but they're not as bad as game critics are making them out to be. I don't know. That's another topic, but man, there's a lot of negativity going on. Some game, I don't know. Sometimes you just got to appreciate a game for what it is.
Yeah, but those don't lead to good click link bait.
Yeah, I know. Oh man.
Probably explains why our show doesn't do better. Why game developers suck. Here, new name for the episode.
Okay. This episode now is called Every Game is Terrible Except the One You Like.
All right.
Big developers, AAA, what do you like? You like BioWare. Is there anything
I
else?
like BioWare. I guess we're all being put to the test to find out if we like Bungie as a developer and not just if we like Halo.
I loved Bungie 15 years ago.
Before they did Halo.
Halo, yeah. Halo's actually the I liked. Did you ever play Oni?
No.
It was pretty cool. It's kind of an anime inspired. It was fun. It wasn't fantastic, but it was good. It was on PlayStation 2 as well, which is kind of funny knowing that Bungie went like Microsoft like a year later. But and I was looking forward to Halo, not really to play it, but to have an actual like map game that would have been cool, I was. This was the dark ages of Mac gaming. This is before the Intel chips and stuff. So
Right.
the games were few and far between. And I mean, I never really was a computer gamer to begin with. I mean, I guess my Apple II. That was one that Apple fans like uses like ammo for. Yeah, we have games. Man, did I love the Myth series that Bungie did? I was a big fan of that. They were similar in style to, I guess, kind of like they were real-time strategy games, I guess similar to Warcraft, but the graphics were amazing, and I loved them. They were really, really good.
Yeah, I didn't have a Mac back in those days, so I definitely can't compare.
Those ones came out on PC too, but I mean, it was a crowded market,
Oh, sure.
For Mac gamers, like, oh, you have a Mac? You need this game.
I I've been rediscovering things on the NES, a lot of things that were done by Rare, and it's kind of difficult to know which games those are, because in the early days they didn't put their name on it, and they had lots of different publishers. Like you mentioned in an earlier podcast, Snake Rattle and Roll.
Yep.
And I never really played it before, but it's one of those isometric games, and I picked it up after we talked about it and played it, and it's a lot of fun. It's a really interesting concept, but. You know, knowing that it's a Rare game now makes me kind of go, oh, obviously I would like this. But then I also picked up Time Lord, again, based on what we discussed in the podcast. And despite that, I don't think it's a very good game. It's a lot of sort of prototype ideas that were later used in Battletoads that I can see.
Well, I mean, Rare also, I mean, they worked with everybody back then. They worked with... what was it? High Tech Expressions, and they did the NES ports of the Sesame Street games.
That's right.
Astro Rover. What else did they do? They did a Taboo: The Sixth Sense, one of the first non-games.
Taboo has nudity in it, also. Granted, it's on a playing card, but there you go.
Yeah.
The kind of thing you would hope to see in a game called Taboo. Definitely in there.
Yeah, it was also the first game, the first NES game with a warning label.
Oh, yeah.
But it said for like ages 14 and up. It was very interesting.
Time Lord was published through Milton Bradley. I guess it was their concept, and Rare just did it. And yeah. Battletoads was through Trade West.
Yep.
Was that like a one of those front publishing companies for some other bigger publisher that needed to get around Nintendo's publishing licensing rules?
Sure, but I think Trade West published other things from like companies like Data East, so
okay.
It might have been, but Trade West outlived the Nintendo publishing thing, so maybe not, because they did titles for the Mega Drive as well.
Okay.
But like companies like Ultra, the front for Konami.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It might have been a real thing. I don't know enough about it.
Okay. Yeah. Battletoads would be the first game I can think of. I think Rare put their name on that one, which is why I knew who they were and was able to draw that line to Donkey Kong Country 64 or Donkey Kong 64.
Oh, yeah, Rare put their names on lots of things on the title screens of the game itself. They weren't on the box, but
right, yeah, yeah. Their logo wouldn't be on there necessarily, but their name would be on there.
So yeah, that's interesting.
Man, yeah, I miss Rare. Like,
yeah,
just I would have gone to England to live to work for them had I been old enough.
What, you don't like Kinect Sports? What they're doing now, and that's what they're going to be doing, you know? Avatars and stuff like that. You know, I thought Viva Pinata looked pretty fun.
I guess.
But I just, I know Microsoft bought them to try to increase their appeal for those type of gamers, but, you know, they're there now. Minecraft is what did it, not Rare. Minecraft.
Right, and that was not a AAA publisher of any kind.
Brought the kids there, Minecraft. Gosh, I remember Blizzard pre-World of Warcraft days. I would buy anything they made.
Well, they didn't put out a whole lot. That was one of those Rare companies, no pun intended, that could release a game like every 3 years and still remain profitable somehow.
Well, they had little stuff too. They did Rock and Roll Racing with Interplay.
Did they?
I believe it was them. I might be confusing that.
Well, I mean, you know, they had Warcraft and Starcraft, obviously, but also Diablo, and those were like the three big franchises that they bounced between. Well, even StarCraft didn't even have a sequel until recently, so that's barely even a blip on the radar, honestly.
An expansion pack, though, and stuff.
Brood War was very, very good.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, Blizzard bought Korea.
I guess they still like StarCraft 2, even though you had to connect to Battle.net to play multiplayer or something, right?
Oh, yeah. Is that for all the multiplayer now? I mean, you can't just call another computer now?
I don't think you can even play single player without being connected to Battle.net anymore.
Do games... Are LAN parties a thing anymore? Does that happen?
If you play a game like Artemis, I guess, which I would love to try and play.
So wait, if I went over to someone's house, like, can I play, if I bring my computer over, wow, we used to actually do that. can I go and play, I don't know, StarCraft 2 or no?
I mean, you could, but you need to be connected to the internet.
Okay, so there's no, well, then what's the point of having a LAN party other than, I don't know, being in closer proximity to these people?
It's all about control, right? I'm sure we could talk about that forever.
Did you ever go to a LAN party?
Not really. I mean, I know conventions have them, but I guess I don't really play the games that are LAN party fair.
Neither did I. I would go to them because I liked video games, but me and a couple other people, like, well, everyone else was like, I don't know, killing sheep in Warcraft 2. Yes, Warcraft 2 was the new one at the time when I was going to LAN parties. I was playing You Don't Know Jack.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man, that's gone to Facebook now. There's an Xbox 360 version of that. That's totally, that used to be, you know, a bastion of, like, clever gaming. Now it's just free to play. Like everything else.
Yeah. I think I have it on my iPhone, and if I pay a certain amount of money to get a certain amount of credits, I can play more during the day, or I don't know. It just made me sad.
At least there's a version of the game you can buy outright, which is nice.
Yeah, there is?
Yeah.
Well, that's cool. I might have to look into that. Like on the PC?
Maybe. I mean, the version I play mostly is on the 360.
Oh, okay. There's a console version. Okay, yeah. That's.
I mean, because it originally was just a PC game.
Yes, it was. And then, I mean, again, one of the very few games that was available for Mac. So I think I had all of them except the sports one, because I'm me. Don't know anything about sports, unless the questions were like, in what sport do you use a bat? And even then, I'd probably have to, you know, wait till a couple of the clues were taken away.
Well, you know, it narrows it down to like baseball, cricket, or
Batman.
Oh, shoot. I didn't even think about that. Well, I guess one of my last thoughts is that I feel like you can tell who like the really creative studios are now because they go to Kickstarter. although there are some companies trying to use that, and I think they either get supported or not supported as they deserve in that regard.
Before we move into the pile of shame, which is a particular favorite of mine, why don't we just mention a couple of the companies that we used to love so much that have just kind of gone a different direction.
Well, I think we mentioned Rare.
Yep. Square.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, man, I used to buy anything with their logo on it. You know, Parasite Eve, Sight Unseen. Didn't even know what type of game it was, you know.
Square published Tomb Raider, but, you know, since they merged with Enix, are they even the same company anymore?
I don't know. I mean, even Enix isn't the same company it was anymore, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah, Enix used to have some really, really good games. They used to work with companies like Treasure. Ah, Treasure! I'll buy almost anything they make.
Are they still around?
Yeah, they're still around.
What have they been doing lately?
Let's see. The most recent... I think they did that port of their old Ikuragawa to Xbox 360... They did Sin and Punishment 2 on the Wii, which is best game that sold nothing. If you want it, it's like $7 right now, and it will be the best $7 you spend on gaming.
Yeah, the first one was like this like import holy grail for N64, which it eventually did get released on the US Wii Shop, I believe.
Yes, at a premium, and we, because the game was entirely in English, really. I mean, some of the menus had Japanese, but like, I mean, all the voices and things were in English, and it was the type of game you could play without having to know any of the language anyway.
Right.
And it was a really good late N64 game. So yeah,
I think there's still some hope for Sega because they recently told Atlus they can do whatever they want with their IP.
Yeah, but I don't know if I trust them. Sega's a company that likes to make titles and not localize them.
Oh, the I Yakuza suppose. And
stuff like that. You know, they put out a lot of, I don't know, I'm thinking Capcom now. Sega. What happened to you?
Well, this Sega got bought by Sammy. They make pachinko machines. They don't make video games.
Sammy made plenty of video games.
What?
Of course. You probably even have a few games by Sammy.
They made lots.
Yes.
Name two.
Guilty Gear.
Nope, I haven't played a Guilty Gear.
Oh. Well, there's probably a few that you played back in the days of the NES. Yeah, they've been around for a long time. I mean, nothing recently, because recently they're Sega, you know, but they did a lot in the NES and Super NES. But I guess they must not have been that good, because I can't think of anything off the top of my head, other than knowing that they did a number of games.
Well, you know, back in the day, we had AM2, which was Yu Suzuki Studio, and the last thing I remember them putting out was Shenmue 2, which that's a whole other story. And then Sonic Team, and the last thing I really loved that they put out was Samba and Samba 2000. That just tells you how old that is.
I played the New Knights. It was okay.
Oh, that's right. They did that. Are we part of the problem?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I bought it for like $10 when it was old, and I felt it was worth the $10 I paid for it, but whenever people try to revive a much-loved franchise, same with Samba, it doesn't always turn out perfect.
Oh, yeah. Well, when you get Gearbox to do a rhythm music game, it's not even a port, right? Like, it's like an actual new game, and they just, I don't know.
But, I mean, luckily there's some luckily, I don't know if luckily is the right word, but some companies that were notorious for always putting out bad games do not exist anymore, so.
Right.
Got LJN is gone.
Well, LJN was mostly a publisher, I guess. You know, I've been paying close to her attention, and it was a company called like Beamsoft or something that actually developed the Back to the Future game. And so even though LJN also published the also not great Bill and Ted, that was a different developer entirely, I believe.
I still hate LJN.
Fair enough. Let's talk about something happier. What's your future retro?
My future retro, and I brought this up last week, 2 weeks ago. I brought up Saturn Bomberman.
Yeah,
the Netlink version being completely unplayable now because it is requiring a internet service that doesn't exist anymore. Now I get a really good email from one of our listeners. He says, I play Netlink Saturn Bomberman all the time. It's still going. And I did a little research on that, that the American version, because it doesn't actually connect to a network, it's dial up to other Netlink users. As long as dial up service still exists, dial up internet service still exists, or actually, I don't even know if you need an ISP. I think you could just dial a friend's house. I'll have to check on that, as I haven't lived in the States for a long time. But
right.
It's still playable. People are still using it. People are still online with that game. But the Japanese was released in two different disc versions, a regular offline one and this one for the X-Band service. You'd actually buy point cards and you'd slip them into a reader on the top, and it would have, like, for a number of games, you'd have credits to play games. And they did this with Virtua Fighter Remix as well. Yeah, there was an online version of that and a couple of other games. But it seems that right now, like, if you don't actually have that bit of hardware and a card inserted with credits, the game won't even start up. For Fighters Megamix and for Bomberman, there's a couple like offline modes you can play, like some bonus stuff, but like the main game itself is pretty much inaccessible.
Okay.
I don't have this to test out. It's a pretty rare title, and I mean, but from everything I found on the internet, the game itself is pretty much unplayable. But I think I maybe worded that wrong in letting people think that the original Saturn Bomberman isn't playable. It's very playable, and Saturn Bomberman is fantastic.
How many players is that one?
10. You have to use 2 multi-taps, 2 5-player multi-taps, but yeah, you can get 10 players. They have to have a special screen mode when you go past 8 players, though. So, like, everything gets, like, really they have to get everything really small, because if they use the regular-sized character sprites, they'd just be too much in too close quarters. The history of Saturn Bomberman is very interesting. It apparently started off as a Iron Man title. Sorry. Your mind just went to the Marvel superhero, right?
Yeah.
Okay. Iron Man was a hardware specification that was supposed to be a follow-up to the PC Engine, and it kind of, in a way, became the PCFX.
Okay, interesting.
They basically did a high-definition Bomberman game called Hi-Ten Bomberman, which was supposed to be, you know, for this new hardware. They demoed it with HD televisions and stuff, but it never got any release, but a lot of the concepts from it were recycled into Saturn Bomberman.
All right.
And it's great. It's got the dinosaurs. It's got cool power-ups. The pacing's right. I like the Wii U Bomberman. Not Wii U Bomberman, sorry. The Wii Bomberman. And it has quite a few players, I think. I think you can get all up to 8 on that one. Like,
how does
4
that
Wii
work?
4 Wii remotes and 4 GameCube.
GameCube, yes. I think someone might have mentioned that in our show notes as well.
I'm not sure, but that one was a little too frantic. Like, the matches were, I don't know. I think a lot of it relied more on luck, like where you got placed at the beginning, and you know, it. I don't know. Saturn Bomberman is the peak of the series for me, and Bomberman 94 is a close second. That's on the PC Engine, and that could have 5 players.
Oh, nice! Right on.
4, maybe. Oh, I can't remember. Okay, a lot.
Well, can I gush about Broken Age again?
Yes.
All right. I'm kind of cheating. I realize. But I don't think we've talked about it since we beat it, have we?
I haven't beat it.
You haven't beat it? What? I thought you beat it.
No.
Oh, God. What am I supposed to say now?
Probably a lot of our listeners haven't beat it either, so just do it.
Oh, good. Good grief. Okay. So... you just threw me for a loop here. What do I say? It's available for the general public now, so if you go to Steam, you can buy it. I think only the backers get the DRM free version, as I recall, once both parts are out. And no clue when part 2 comes out yet. But I got to the end. It's a very natural stopping point. I'm very excited to see where part 2 goes. And it has changed the way I viewed everything I've done in the game so far.
Wow.
Yes.
Ooh.
You should finish that game.
I guess so I can finish the game.
Oh, is that your pile of shame?
I just haven't had a lot of gaming time this week in general.
Oh, I hear you. So yeah, let's move into pile of shame then.
All right, pile of shame. I'm going to say Grand Theft Auto Vice City.
You play Grand Theft Auto?
Obviously not if it's in the pile.
Have you ever played a Grand Theft Auto game before?
I played the original on the PC, the top-down. I played that one. I own Grand Theft Auto 2 for the Dreamcast, but I never really played it much. It was in a discount bin because it was before Grand Theft Auto 3 came out, and it was kind of a, you know, it wasn't seen as a top tier title.
Okay. Well, from what the lay gamers tell me, Vice City is one of the really good ones.
Well, I the reason I picked that one up is I wanted to see what the Grand Theft Auto series was all about, and I'm a child of the 80s, so I thought that would be kind of interesting because apparently one of the cool features about Grand Theft Auto games is the radio stations and stuff. And I can't like it. I don't know. And I think maybe I'm playing it wrong because I usually play video games sober. I can't think of any other, or maybe it's because I don't play it with friends watching or something, but like for the most part, I don't get much joy out of like running over pedestrians and clubbing people. I know that's like the appeal of the game is that you can go anywhere, do anything, but I'm more of the person who's like, no, please tell me where to go and what to do, and I want to be the hero. And I
Who's the guy? He's on the Polaris Network. He's got like 25 million subscribers, and all he does is like hack these games to make them do stupid things and talk in a baby voice the entire time.
Oh, that sounds dreadful.
Hey man, he's probably making money hand over fist. But yeah, that's all he does in these games is like he does the stupidest stuff possible without actually playing them.
Oh, we really need a new financial model. We talk about video games and do these research things. I think from now on, I'm just going to aim my camera at the screen and yell.
Try it. You
I
have a
should probably
YouTube channel, just put it up.
put a video game on the screen, though, right? I shouldn't just yell. Drivers are horrible. I don't know, though. I like video games too much to yell at them.
I suppose.
I don't know, like my video game time is very limited right now. So like if I'm gonna play a video game, I want it to be one that I really, really enjoy playing. I don't know. I don't have time to waste playing bad games or watching bad movies at this time, you know? I don't know. So it doesn't anger me that bad games exist so much because just ignore them.
I don't have time to play good games even, which is why Donkey Kong Country Returns is on my pile of shame. I mean,
Ah, do you have?
it's especially sobering because we were talking about Rare, which is no longer around, and they did the original Donkey Kong Country, and then Retro is like this is the only thing they do anymore. And Tropic Freeze just came out, so it just reminded me that I haven't finished the last installment yet, and it's 3 years old at this point.
Oh, I never even bought it. I don't. I enjoyed the first Donkey Kong Country very much, but pile of shame, Omake edition. I have never played Donkey Kong Country 2 or Donkey Kong Country 3.
Ooh, yeah, I played a bit of two and I didn't play any of three. Which one introduced Dee Dee? Was that her name?
Dee?
Who's the girl? Diddy. No, Diddy's the
Dixie.
Dixie. Criminy. Yeah, like,
Diddy, the first one, yeah.
is Donkey Kong even in the third game?
I don't know. I've never played the third one.
Yeah,
Maybe I
so.
might have rented it. But like, it hasn't made enough of an impression on me to know whether I've played it or not.
Yeah, at the time those games came out, I just was not really like Diddy was almost a bridge too far for me. And then like you made the side characters the star of the show, and I was like, oh, I'm out.
Of Cranky Kong just because he was the original Donkey Kong, and I thought that was very, very clever at the time,
Well,
but
Cranky's playable in the new one, I believe.
Nintendo went on, I don't know, the video game award show or something, and their big announcement was Cranky Kong is playable, whereas everyone was hoping their big announcement was we're gonna actually make games for this thing.
This is a game?
Yeah, it's a game, but it's a game that's already been announced, you know. It wasn't. Everybody tune in. Big things, big announcements. We're like, whoa, big announcements. The big announcement was Cranky Kong.
Maybe someday we'll talk about how terrible Nintendo's marketing is, or maybe we've just done that enough. I don't know.
I mean, for people expecting the typical Nintendo holding your hand all the way through it, which maybe 3D World does a little too much, but, you know, no, you actually have to have some skills, which means that it'll probably be in my pile of shame in a couple of years.
All right, you heard it here first. Stay tuned for episode 197.
The episode title is Vink is Weak Sauce.
All right, well, I think that about wraps it up. So all you out there, let us know what your favorite publishers, past or present, are, or if they're even the same one. That would be remarkable. I definitely want to hear about that. And you can contact us on our famicomdojo.tv/podcast in the show notes, or Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, I guess, if that's your kind of thing. Stitcher Radio. Can't forget Stitcher Radio. We are on that thing. And our free iTunes storefront, where you can leave a comment and rate us. Please, please rate. It helps every little bit.
Zune.
Did I mention YouTube? We're on YouTube. We have a separate YouTube channel, everyone. I keep getting comments on the main That's Orange channel, and it's like, where's my Famicom Dojo? It's on its own channel called Famicom Dojo. I'm releasing a video prior to this podcast to that effect, so everyone knows, because it still seems to be not commonly known yet.
You mean, but by Famicom Dojo channel, you mean the Sean Orange channel, right?
Oh, I'm gonna... Good night, everybody. Until next week, the dojo is...
The Sean Orange channel.
Anyway.
Famicom Dojo.